Shrink Wrap Radio number 827, philosopher Tim Shaw, PhD, on trauma and moral injury. Today's episode is brought to you by MindspaceTV.com, where therapists will find an abundance of resources to support their work with clients. Check them out at www.mindspacetv.com.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Australian philosopher Timothy Shaw, PhD, who researches the concept of moral injury. He's the director of the Great Philosophical Problems Think Tank. In addition, Dr. Shaw has taught ethics at the University of Sydney and is also a leading voice in the critique of philosopher Immanuel Levinas and the just war tradition. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Timothy Shaw, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here. You're a philosopher, and we're going to be discussing your work on moral injury and just war theory. But before we get into that, I'd like to know more about your background, you know, like how you got into this whole philosophy gig and so on. Now, when you were a kid, what did you think you were going to grow up to be?
I didn't really think about it. When I was a kid, I was doing a lot of sport, I was swimming most days. I'd be up at 5 o'clock. I went to university, went to school. I never really gave it too much thought about a job or a career, because I'm not too sure. I really wasn't motivated towards a job or towards a career in that sort of respect. And I guess I just sort of fell into, once I started thinking about this idea, it sort of just started to dawn on me how complex it was. And over time, it just manifested into what it is now.
Yeah. So when did you discover philosophy as a discipline? Like, was that your major as an undergraduate?
Yeah. No, well, I guess my first sort of look, I started off with a Bachelor of Science. And that was quite an experience, learning a whole new lexicon of I guess it's really a whole new language, that is a philosophy in a way. And then I got exposure to, I guess, more of a philosophical bent through looking at what the just war tradition has said throughout the millennia since its inception. And it's a school of thought that is the longest running moral decision-making process for the Western mind that has been going on since at least the 3rd century, and Augustine, as he investigated what wars should be fought and how one should fight these wars in a society. And that's sort of really what sparked my interest in philosophy in general. And although I guess it's easy to say that in retrospect, but I guess that would be the kernel.
Okay. You know, in a way, just war sounds like an oxymoron. On the one hand, it's like that's kind of a repugnant idea in some ways. But on the other hand, it's good to be having somebody who's thinking about that and who is thinking about policy and how governments and people who make big decisions about these things might be guided.
Well, it's even possibly even deeper than that. For the origins of just war and how it's developed, it looked at how during its inception, where there were the culture or the society found it very difficult to understand how to justify killing or what it meant to kill in war. So, for example, who was innocent? And at the start of the just war tradition, innocence was wrapped around moral innocence. So moral innocence. So, for example, if you could go to war and if a population was guilty, it meant then men, women and children were guilty. And that idea of innocence has been operationalized around the ability to cause harm. So now innocence is in war is someone that poses a threat. And so it's moved towards understanding who is a legitimate target in war, how to kill in war. And that is obviously morphed into some poignant pointers for states, but it was really originating from the church and to say, well, there's a famous war cry, you know, men, you can kill without danger to your souls. And this idea of how wars are waged and the actions of war and how those are internally processed have been some of the major considerations for that tradition.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the impact of religion, and I wondered if you considered going into religion yourself or religious studies. Was that on your menu of options?
It's Australia's a long way away from Rome. It hadn't crossed my mind. As a younger person that's been growing up in the times in which growing up, you know, I think for a lot of people of my age group, especially where I've grown up, justice or international justice has superseded religion or a belief in religion. It's not something that crossed my mind.
Yeah. Well, let's get into your work on moral injury. How did you come to be interested in moral injury? That's not a topic that I'm terribly familiar with.
No, of course. So it's, recently in Scientific America, just did a big piece on it, calling it a silent epidemic that affects millions of people. It's an emerging idea it's an idea of our times that when I was looking for a topic to do a PhD or a doctorate in, I was looking at the literature because it has it's a term that has come on the back of this idea of post-traumatic stress disorder, and as if that wasn't complicated enough, There's this new idea of moral injury, and I thought, isn't that interesting? There's at least three definitions of this moral injury, a cultural definition and a clinical definition and a sort of a religious way of looking at it. And I thought, I wonder what this thing actually is. And I wonder, like, how it's going to be articulated in the future, and how it can sort of and how a language or a lexicon can develop around this to start to join all these fields together.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about is what is the definition of moral injury? And you kind of suggested that there's maybe more than one, but
yeah.
Of course.
Well, Jonathan Shea has been credited with kicking off the discussion in the field, and he talks about in his book Achilles in Vietnam, talking about how moral injury when you've been let down in a high stakes situation by someone in a position of authority, and what that and how that manifests the deleterious effects that can have. That was recently upgraded by some psychologist, Brett Litz, and they were talking about actions of omission or commission that goes against one's inner compass that can have deleterious effects. And the importance of these definitions and all of these ideas is reflected in the suicide rate of veterans, soldiers, particularly in America, which it's such a large and such a traumatized population that it can sustain a death rate of almost one per hour, which is a horrible.
Those are veteran suicides, one per hour.
Yes. Yeah, no, America has reached a very strange pivot point where most of the deaths that they experience of this soldierly cohort are on home soil.
Yeah. Now, are we talking mostly Desert Storm, or what period? I know that you've done some work with veterans. What period are you dealing with?
Yeah, no. Well, since Vietnam, there has been a particular emphasis on coming home, and that emphasis on coming home alive has necessitated the action, there are a lot more soldiers, thankfully, surviving and coming back home, and it's something that has not happened before in the history of warfare, and it's just a new phenomenon that has been gradually happening because of advances in medical life-saving technologies. And is reaching a zenith at the moment through unmanned or UAV combat, where the soldier really is home all the time.
Yes, yeah, and I know that they've found that that's a very stressful job, even though the soldier is quotes at home, but they're fully as traumatized as if they had been in the theater of war.
Well, a lot of the work involved with a UAV drone operator it's not as if all of a sudden you click on a target. There's a lot of surveillance. You become intimately connected with the movements of that target, who their family, what they're doing, their lives. You might be following this person for a week, for months, right? And once, and it's very difficult. And obviously that connection especially I've heard some horrible stories of some very horrible stories of drone operators that have been following some targets and have set off an ordnance and have killed some family, and that becomes very difficult because it's not it's it's you're following, you're tracking a person, you're tracking their movements, you're really getting to understand their lives as almost like, you know, an omnipresent God in the sky.
Yeah. So in other words, you're beginning to know them as a person rather than as, you know, we have ways over the history to demonize the enemy and to dehumanize them. And, you know, so that psychologically it's okay to kill them because they're not really people, you know. They're gooks or they're, you know, some other thing like that. And this sort of penetrates through that because now you're beginning to care for them as a person, to see that they're a human being, much as yourself.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's a yes, certainly.
So you mentioned PTSD. What's the difference between PTSD and moral injury?
Well, I should probably explain what PTSD is. Before 1975, psychological trauma was deemed an unnatural reaction to something that was unnatural, so an unnatural stressor. And because that psychological trauma before PTSD was considered unnatural, there was no lexicon or there was no grammar to talk about sufferers or psychological sufferings. Now, almost with the stroke of a pen, PTSD was ushered in and trauma became a normal reaction to an abnormal stressor. And that ushered in a situation where whether or not you broke your mind or your mind was broken, being shot at or shooting at somebody, right? Both not normal situations. PTSD deemed that trauma something that was a normal reaction. So whether or not you had PTSD from being shot at or whether or not you had PTSD from shooting, that was considered normal because those were abnormal situations. However, with PTSD, it became very, it started off as in the DSM as something that was mediated by fear. And because of the mediation of fear, it was rearticulated and taken mostly as a victim-centric conception of trauma because society, and it became a bellwether of society. However, if you looked at the longitudinal studies of Vietnam veterans, was saying something slightly different. They said it's not quite fear, and the biggest predictor of PTSD or something like that, or what was happening, is not seeing your friend being blown up or people shooting at you or this or that. It was killing someone else or shooting someone or taking someone's life. And in that regard, fear or was not really maybe there was even excitement, of course. So moral injury came on the back of post-traumatic stress disorder. It started off as a definition, just like PTSD, of how soldiers are looking at, this is where it gets interesting. This is where the definition deviates and where there's a little bit of room and where a lot of people and institutions and ideas are coming in and vying for the moral injury space or what it means to be morally injured or how moral injury can be used to affect change or to cry out for injustice and the like, because it is now becoming a catch cry for example, a pandemic or moral injury after a pandemic and that is another sort of morphing of the idea.
Huh.
Yeah.
So The idea that I'm getting here is that it's kind of gone beyond PTSD, which was really in a book, the DSM, and a listing of sort of bullet points. And if the person is evidencing 7 out of 10 bullet points or something along those lines, then they have PTSD. The idea of moral injury is going further, and it's kind of talking about the inner experience of the person who's gone through a traumatic event and or helped to create a traumatic event for somebody else. And that, you know, kind of almost brings us back to the religious perspective of that there's something in the human soul that's violated by all of this.
Well, I think it certainly brings us around to situating it within a religious context. And the emergence of moral injury is it's a historical just as much as it is a psychological emergence. And it's no coincidence that it has emerged at the end of 2,000 years of Christian thought, and it's no coincidence that it has emerged after World War II and the Holocaust, and it's no coincidence that it's emerged and emerging as we see a decline of the religious institutions and the influence of these religious institutions on cultural and social life.
Yeah. You know, coincidentally, the interview that I'll do next week is with someone I've interviewed before. I wonder if you've heard of him, Dr. Edward Tick, who has worked extensively with Vietnam veterans and took veterans back to Vietnam to dialogue with the very people that they had bombed or shot at or, you know, families were killed and so on. And fascinating work and transformative and brought, and people were able to find meaning in the dialogue.
That's exactly the search for meaning or the articulation of meaning is the is certainly the bellwether of moral injury. And the emergence of the term moral injury is the emergence of in a general sense, Christians or Christian societies finding a meaning for suffering and the work that I've been doing recently or looking has been trying to find a definition which wraps all that together. And and it's through Friedrich Nietzsche who does provide an idea of the meaning for suffering, because he identified and this is the stage in which moral injury is stepping onto, that the biggest problem for the psyches of humans is not suffering per se, because people will seek suffering out even. It's finding a meaning for that suffering, and if you can't find meaning for that suffering, then that becomes a tremendous a problem and a morally injurious problem at that.
Uh-huh. Interesting that Nietzsche somehow fits in to what we're talking about here. Edward Tick, who I spoke to before, draws upon the mythic imagery in helping veterans come to terms with what they've done and their involvement. And he calls upon the archetype of the warrior. And so, you know, and persuades these veterans that this is an archetype that's been around as long as human beings have been around, and that it has there are ways in which it's necessary and valued, as well as having, you know, these heavy burdens to bear. And somehow this has been very helpful. Now, I'm interested that you keep referring to the Christian tradition, and I'm wondering, well, what about, you know, these days, the polar opposite for many of us is the Muslim world. And how does this idea, do they have a concept of moral injury? How are they dealing? These sound like very human reactions, really, more than being predicated on a particular religious upbringing.
Well, with moral injury, if you're looking, if you have a god, or we must remember that the recent war in Afghanistan was a war in a country that was 99.9% a single religion, which was the Muslim religion. How that's articulated, or what is fallen back on is, in moral injury, is this will to truth. And this is something that's very important for understanding why it's emerged in a Christian sense or in Christian societies, and possibly what the difference is between moral injury in religion. So with a will to truth, or the psychologies that are born with a will to truth, which is a Christian psychologies and enlightened societies that come with that, the will to truth strips away, you could say, almost the crutch of religion. And if you have societies that haven't undergone an enlightened transition, which have historically been have undergone through this mechanism of truth, or extolling truth as the highest virtue, then, you know, there is a stop. You say, well, hang on a second, why did this happen to me? Well, you know, you stop thinking about why it happened to you, because it happened to you because it was a divine occurrence, or there was divine meaning behind it, and that and it stops that mechanism right where it is, and moral injury becomes a lack of a disconnection of faith in a way in that regard. And you're right, it's very interesting to look at moral injury, or how moral injury is articulated through different religions, and it is articulated or understood even slightly different in the Judeo idea of the Judeo-Christian tradition, as it is in Muslim or Islamic cultures.
Yeah. Now, I gather that you've done some direct work with veterans. Is that right? Have you tell us about that?
I've got a veteran that comes comes in most days, and I've got a think tank that is developing ideas through the veteran community, and I guess in a theoretical sense, the most work that I've done with a veteran, and I know this is a slightly strange way of answering your question, is through looking at a historical veteran, whom has written a lot about war, who has provided and who gives a new and clarifying definition to this field of moral injury.
Is this a certain person that you're talking about?
Yes. So he's at, look, it's surprising, but there was a veteran in history that before he went to war, he volunteered for military service through his country, patriotic, and when he went to war, he went to war as a medic and as a captain and medic, and the experiences of war and he affected him. He came back, and the first thing he did was rip up his citizenship, give it back to the didn't give it to anyone, put it in the bin, and remained a stateless veteran and a stateless philosopher for the rest of his life. And it was only after this gentleman got back from war that he started writing his books. And it was in these writings that a new definition of moral injury can be found. And the name of this veteran, we've just touched on it, we touched on it before, is Friedrich Nietzsche. And what not many people know is that his writings are inspired by war. His first book, The Birth of Tragedy, is a meditation on understanding, as your friend looking at Greek mythologies or Greek archetypes of how to understand tragedy or what a tragic idea looks like, and trying to reconcile wartime experiences with a happy outlook. And then that birth of tragedy that he writes about when he first gets back from war morphs into a joyous wisdom over the next 10 years. And at that 10-year period, he writes a masterwork that takes one through the moral injury and how to deal with it and how to think about it through his work of Thus Spake Zarathustra, which is a meditation on really understanding the crux of the problem that we have been presented with.
Wow, I didn't know any of that, and you've given me a task for more research on my part.
Nietzsche was this is exciting work that I'm doing at the moment. So Nietzsche, he was a master linguist, and he's left some clues about how to read his corpus of work, because it's very, very difficult. He defines moral injury, or moral injury is defined by Nietzsche as a disruption to the psyche. So he strips away all the understanding. He says, hang on a second, what is this soul business? I mean, what actually is a soul? He said that moral injury, it's a disruption to one's psyche from a will to truth that has become conscious of itself as a problem in us. And this definition that he has, it describes the historical emergence of moral injury, which is an emergence where... the will to truth moral injury is intimately related with a Christian notion the notion in modernity now of this will to truth. And it's something that has been credited by him and others as undercutting the religion that had spawned it. And so the emergence of moral injury is an emergence of a psychology and a disruption to that psychology from a will to truth that we are starting to become conscious of. And in the psychologies of people, that is a disruption to the psyche. If you come back from war, or if you see something horrible, this disruption to one's psyche from a will to truth, where it says, "Hang, why is this happening? Why is this happening?" This leading into a nihilistic idea is a very central part of understanding moral injury, because before that, and for many, many years, You could always find meaning in this will to truth about why things are happening or why something bad has happened to me, because through the church, you would say, well, this is happening to you because you, in the end, at its deepest manifestation, you deserved it because you are fallen from grace. You are in an incomplete relationship to the divine. And because Christianity is a salvation orientated school of thought, and not like a Catholic idea, which is not salvation orientated, and because Christian psyches strive for salvation, without a God, how do you redeem yourself, or where's the redemption? And your friend that is taking. Taking veterans back to Vietnam, that process, and those festivals of atonement and those sacred games are very important and can become very poignant for those that are suffering. Yeah.
Again, I have the impression, and it's not clear to me, that you've done some actual work with actual veterans. Am I right about that or not? Or is it more of a literature research and thought process?
Look, at the moment, the main role of the think tank is to develop a unifying definition for moral injury. The think tank is, I mean, the think tank as well, it reaches out. We speak with veteran communities. We've made submissions to, there's currently a Royal Commission in Australia for veteran suicide. We're an independent non-for-profit. So we do as we can, whether it's on an individual level or whether it's with the institutions and the governments.
Yeah. Give me the name of the think tank. I know there's a website that you've created, and I don't have that in front of me.
No, of course. No, it's a Great Philosophical Problems think tank. We've got a group as well on LinkedIn. We've got some fabulous veterans, sitting politicians, political leaders from the US and also from Australia. That are connected in that network or under that banner, and we are positioned next to some centers of excellence in the world, the International Center for Moral Injury, which is based out of Durham, which is run by Reverend Dr. Brian Powers and also Timothy Maillard from the United States War College in Washington.
So you've got a bunch of movers and shakers and thought leaders coming together on LinkedIn and having discussions or making plans?
Yes. Yeah. So in the field at the moment is going through a renewal. In June next year, the think tank has been invited to deliver a big presentation for the delivery of continuing professional accreditation units for professionals in the field. And developing and straightening out the ideas that are surrounding this concept, and understanding how they can be treated, and where possible treatment outcomes can be found.
Uh huh. And so, as you look forward to the future, where do you see your work, your career going?
Oh, that's a great question. Look, I'm in the death throes of writing a book, which is almost reaching fruition, and we've also we're in talks in starting up a publishing house and becoming a center of excellence for literature of this nature, and. Look, it's moral injury provides the vocabulary for to talk to power. It provides the vocabulary to talk with states. It's not dealing with ordinary problems. The problems are historically new and different, and the those that it affects are the most studied and the most protected cohort of people that have ever existed, which are American warriors, and the warriors of America have been, they are the most studied and most cared for population in the world. There has been so much money, so much effort put into their well-being, and it's something that is, a top priority at all levels, both here, both in Australia and America, for government.
And do you have how successful has that effort of pouring money and providing care and sustenance to those veterans? How successful has that been in your view?
Well, it hasn't been successful, and that's the, in Australia. It certainly hasn't been. It's on a different scale than America, and we have a Royal Commission at the moment underway. In America, it has, despite best efforts and perhaps there haven't been the best efforts. But there certainly is an imperative now, and a groundswell in America around veterans and veteran health, and veteran recognition, and that is very much welcomed. I can certainly say.
Yeah. Is there a call to action in all of this? A call to action for our listeners and viewers, for citizens?
Sure. Well, it's very difficult. So in the work and in the talks that I've had with veterans and active military personnel, the call to action, they don't need a call to action. It's the societies that are around them that they are protecting that need the call to action. And it's a call that has not been. It's something that is very. It's difficult to. It's difficult even for people, even if they hear the call, to understand really what's the crux of what's being called of them, how one is to respond to such people whom the state who. You see, soldiers are different than civilians. The state serves civilians, and soldiers serve the state. And it's a different mind frame. It's a different understanding of expectation, different understanding of responsibility, and it's something that is very difficult to articulate throughout society. Especially, yes, very difficult, very, very, very difficult. And once that articulation, if you get it right, has an immense possibility to alleviate some of the pressures on the minds and the souls of the veteran community.
Yeah, well, it's certainly these are big projects that you've painted for yourself to take on, particularly with your think tank to wrestle with the big philosophical problems, and you're underscoring the main one for us right now has to do with war and conflict. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. War is ubiquitous. How it's been, how warriors and how societies have understood post-war rebuilding. I've been having discussions as well about what's happening at the moment in the Middle East and with Israel, and they are saying that we're building settlements on disputed land because we pushed the enemy back when there was a six-day war, and we're now going to build on this land. And understanding the justice or these ideas of what happens after war, what happens to the soldiers, what happens to the ideas of society, how are the vanquished dealt with? What are these ideas? It's called a justice post-bellum. How do we articulate our responsibility not only to an enemy or an ex-enemy? How do we articulate our responsibility to the soldiers that have fought for us? And how do we care for the minds which have surrendered to become means to ends? And how do you protect that? And how do you care for it? And how do you extol it to societies? And how do you because these ladies, men and women, they're highly trained people, and whether or not it's a combat or whether or not it's not non-combat, the thoughts and the responsibility that they have had to internally articulate about their role in society and their role to themselves is invaluable. And the voice of veterans, whether it be in our societies or whether it could be channeled into humanitarian institutions, is invaluable. Absolutely invaluable for the going forward of the modernity in which we hope to be able to live through, because who knows what's around the corner, and one thing's for sure, it's very unlikely that humanity will progress into infinity without a very catastrophic failure of human thought and action.
Well, these are certainly big issues that you're wrestling with, and I commend you for being willing to take them on and try to make something happen. And
thank you very much.
Yeah, is there anything more that you want to add before we wrap things up here?
No, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, likewise. Okay, well, Dr. Timothy Shaw, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio. My most recent interview is with Australian philosopher Timothy W. Shaw, PhD. One of the major tasks of philosophy, as I understand it, is to ask the big questions. Dr. Tim Shaw has taken on that mandate in a big way. In fact, he's created an online site, which he describes as a think tank, at greatphilosophicalproblems.com. In his bio, we read, quote, "The mission of the Great Philosophical Problems Think Tank is to provide a unifying definition and accompanying phenomenology for the construct of moral injury to address suicide in veteran and wider civilian populations, like the social lexicons provided by PTSD, they set out to provide the moral grammar of the signature wound of contemporary war. Close quote. Now, as an interviewer, my job is to ask questions. In this case, I was asking questions of a philosopher, a professional question asker himself. Inasmuch as I'm not a philosopher, I must confess his answers were not always clear to me. For example, I wasn't prepared to learn that apparently much of his thinking rests on the writings of Nietzsche, who is regarded as the most controversial philosopher of all time, at least in some quarters. I'm totally out of my depth there. Dr. Shaw also referenced as a core moral principle the will to truth, which evidently is an idea that comes out of Nietzsche's writing and is explored in depth in a book by French philosopher Michel Foucault. Now, I'm really drowning in my own ignorance. I'm just not qualified to evaluate any of this. What is clear to me is that Tim Shaw is a likable, enthusiastic, and idealistic young scholar who is unafraid to tackle some of the thorniest questions of our time having to do with the ethics of conflict and war. These are questions that have plagued humankind since the beginning of time. The capacity to not only destroy our enemies, but our whole planet, makes them particularly pressing in this moment. Dr. Shaw has studied the history of war from earliest times through the First and Second World Wars, Korea, Vietnam, and the Persian Gulf Wars. Over the course of these conflicts, our understanding of the psychic costs of these conflicts on both the warriors and the civilian populations have deepened. Dr. Shaw's concern is particularly drawn to the U.S., which has the largest population of suffering veterans in history. He cites research showing record rates of suicide among our veterans, a sign of deeper and more widespread suffering. We've moved from the psychological impact of PTSD to recognize deeper wounds which are characterized by the term moral injury. Once again, drawing on his biographical statement for a definition, we find, quote, moral injury, which is the damage done to one's conscience or moral compass when the person perpetrates, witnesses, or fails to prevent acts that transgress one's own moral beliefs, values, or ethical codes of conduct. Most research to understand moral injury has been with military service members and veterans, as the nature of war and combat create situations where people may have experiences that contradict the values they live by in civilian life. He goes on to say, examples of potentially morally injurious events in the context of war include killing or harming others, when officers have to make decisions that affect the survival of others, and when medics are not able to care for all who are harmed in a conflict. Close quote. I'm impressed by Tim Shaw's compassion for the human toll of these conflicts and his ambition to mobilize government and leadership entities to recognize the reality and cost of moral injury. I also admire his creation of an online think tank to stimulate a wider conversation that includes veterans, philosophers, political leaders, military planners, and other influencers to move the needle before it's too late.
Hi, Dr. Dave. It's Faye calling from London, UK. Thanks so much for doing the work that you're doing. More than happy to throw $5 your way. Absolutely worth it, and I know I won't miss it. Keep up the good work. Thanks so much. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Faye in London. And of course, thank you to all you other monthly supporters. It feels so good to see your names as I scroll through the list of monthly donors preparing for each podcast. Once again, time to shrink wrap it up. Thanks to my guest, Australian philosopher Timothy Shaw, PhD, for sharing your work on moral injury. Next week, my guest again will be Dr. Ed Tick, who's been on the show before discussing his work with Vietnam vets and taking them back to Vietnam for healing. This time, we'll be discussing Ed's forthcoming book, Soul Medicine, Healing Through Dream Incubation, Visions, Oracles, and Pilgrimage. He's a great guest. You definitely don't want to miss this one. Once again, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves, others, and our precious Earth.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.